On this episode of Football 301, we recap the divisional round weekend, all four games, and it's a three-man weave. Charles McDonald and Matt Harmon join me to recap that great slate of games. We start with the overtime thriller, Soldier Field. I'll call it a thriller because that Caleb Williams touchdown sure sent a jolt up my spine, but we recap the three other games as well. We go for it for about an hour and a half, almost featured movie length. Great time with the guys. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. Divisional round recap. That is what we are doing. We had four games this weekend, and we are going to dive right into it. Very fun games, especially with an OT capper at Soldier Field with the Rams winning. We will definitely jump into that, the three other games. I am joined on this recap show, this live recap show, for the first time. A three-man weave. We did it. We're here. All three of us. One place. We finally did it. Great to see you guys. Matt, I'll start with you. We're going to go left to right. That'll just make it easy on myself. So, Matt, how you doing? Matt Harmon. Enjoy this weekend. Enjoy it. Great to see you as well.
Absolutely. I enjoyed this weekend. I feel like I've aged 10 years through the course of the NFL playoffs so far, and I'm not emotionally invested in any of these teams whatsoever, but still, that's how exciting this has been.
And of course, Charles McDonald, Mr. Forverts, whose favorite team hired a head coach today. But we don't want to, you know, I don't know if we want to start the show with that, but I'm sure he's pretty happy about that. But great to see you, Chuck. Have you aged as well? Have you gotten over the quarterback discourse that started off the weekend and we just coasted from there?
Well, I don't read any of that stuff anymore, so I'm totally fine with that. I had a pretty good weekend. I thought every single game that was played this weekend was thoroughly enjoyable for different reasons. So, definitely excited to break it down with you guys tonight.
I agree. I know, all fun in their own ways, even the blowout that happened Saturday night in Seattle, but all fun four games. Like you said, we'll just jump right into that. But right before we do that, make sure to check out the new Yahoo NBA channel on YouTube and subscribe to that. The new home of our friends, KOC, the Kevin O'Connor Show, the Dunker Spot with Nikias and the Big Number. All great stuff that those guys are doing. So make sure to check out the Yahoo NBA channel. Subscribe over at yahoo.com/YahooNBA. Okay, let's get into it. We ended with an overtime game because that's how it always works when you're doing a live show. It has to be the last game, has to be OT, just has to. But a very fun one. Rams win 20-17 in OT. We got stretches of very strong defense on both sides, some hero plays at the end of this game, one in regulation by Caleb Williams throwing a 51-yarder in the air that only went down as, what, a 14-yard touchdown. NextGen Stats had it as the record for the furthest pass behind the line of scrimmage by at least 5 yards, by almost 5 yards, the furthest in NextGen Stats history. But the Rams win this game, move the ball in overtime, on their second possession in overtime, and pull out with this win in Chicago. Matt, I'll start with you. Thoughts on the Rams moving on, the Bears, how they looked? Of course, there was the interception in overtime, but I'm curious what you just thought of this great game.
Yeah, weirdly, I feel like the Rams like dodged a bullet here in this one. I think they played with fire for a long stretch of this game. In the first half, it felt like they had a real clear advantage in the ground game, and they never really relied on that. They kind of messed around a little bit with the game management later on with the timeouts in this one. And ultimately, when it felt like the game was in Caleb Williams' hands at the very end of it, and at the fourth quarter, obviously inside the 2 minutes, and then in overtime, he has the great scramble. He has several great highlight moments, and it ends on an interception from a great defensive play, very heads up play there. But like, to me, that was kind of a little bit of a what are we doing on that route, DJ Moore moment. So it was a wild one at the end, mm-hmm. but it certainly felt like it didn't feel like one of these teams, at least today on this Sunday night, was dramatically better or worse than the other. It did just feel like the Rams got away with it a little bit. It was a great game by them, and their defense certainly stood out, especially in the second. I thought both secondaries played above my expectations in this one. I thought this was going to be, I don't know how you guys previewed it, I thought it was going to be more of the passing games might get what they want here, and there were certainly some mistakes that probably wiped that off the board, certainly from the Bears pass catchers here, but nevertheless, I thought that this was a game where with both secondaries stood out to me as big difference makers on either side.
Yeah, the Bears just brought the heat over and over with their DBs. I mean, blitzing them like double digits times. Kyler Gordon had a nice bounce back game after last week. That DJ Moore play, our friend Next Gen, Keegan Abdu from Next Gen Stats had this, but DJ Moore miles per hour when that pass was thrown, 18.33. DJ Moore miles per hour when that pass arrived, 15.38. He slowed down and worse than all, he should have been flattening the route where I saw where Caleb was trying to throw it. It's just one of the, I mean, that's what happens when not a lot of room for error when you're trying stuff down the field. And if something's off, that's just what it looks like. Chuck, what'd you think of this game? Also, I kind of feel the same way, kind of like an even matchup. One surprising stat before I kick to you, Chuck, the Bears had a 51% dropback success rate and the Rams had 30%. I thought those numbers might actually be like kind of near each other going into the game and maybe even feeling it, but Bears actually had a really nice performance.
Man, that the DJ Moore play, that's going to be burned forever in Bears lore. And I would love to know his miles per hour when the ball was actually thrown, because he had almost stopped running like completely, which is crazy. I mean, dude, you're one game away from the NFC title. Like, go. Yeah. And even if you can't make a play and catch the ball, you can at least get there, maybe break it up and make it a little bit, a little bit harder to catch. So that was just so bad. But all in all, fun game, man. Like I thought that, you know, even for a house money season that the Bears had, it is frustrating for it to end like this. But at the end of the day, you have proof of concept that this thing can work. It can work at a high level. Obviously, you've got your franchise quarterback. And even in a game where it wasn't like always clean at times, because, you know, they had the turnovers and the interceptions, even though the last one I wouldn't really put on Caleb. It was just like a nice like team performance. And then probably the best called game from Dennis Allen all season, where that Bears defense, been kind of Swiss cheese, and you laid it out with the numbers earlier. They played incredible, a lot better than I thought they would, and the aggressive like changeup was kind of nice to see, because we know Matthew Stafford's killed the blitz all year, and they got home a few times. I'm guessing that the they were using the weather as like a factor in how much they were deciding to blitz. But yeah, that was a great call game from Dennis Allen. And man, just so close at the end and couldn't quite get it done. Because at the end, I kind of found myself like, man, I would love to see them get it done, even though I did pick the Rams in this game, because I mean, what a cool story. Like, this is the best Bears team I've seen in my whole life, or at least the most fun one.
I mean, shoot, how the defense played at the end, it was like made it feel more complete. But I mean, this best Bears offense, best Bears passing game I easily have seen. Definitely. No, the blitz stuff was great from Dennis Allen. Matthew Stafford went 6-15 for 105 yards against the blitz. Got him late. There's a Brisker sack on it, a Kyler Gordon sack on it. But then this was the gash or be gashed of it, was there was like a Parkinson play that happened in the fourth quarter, like a catch and run. And then there was the Puka Nacua third down on the last drive to set up the field goal. And then the Rams just lost their minds and started throwing fade balls at the end of the game when they were in field goal range. I'm not going to lie. I feel pretty good about knowing the rules in the NFL. And this playoffs has had me checking my notes from last week with the Josh Allen slide. This whole, we'll get into it with the Broncos-Bills game, I'm sure. But also just like that, I was like, wait, it's sudden death, right? After the first possession, right? Like I was like, is it a whole quarter? You have to score 10. Like I actually double checked because I was wondering why they were so freaking aggressive on that. But no, I really did think that. And when it came down to it, like Devontae Adams was quiet the whole game, and there was big, huge play on the sideline. Like their playmakers made plays at the end. The Rams special teams almost reared their ugly heads before that Caleb Williams hero play. They had a botched or a brutal punt that went just to midfield. But no, I just, it was cool. I that's what I love about playoff football. You kind of could throw some things just completely out, out into the water, because it's just like, this is so hyper game planned. And you get guys like Dennis Allen going like, yeah, all of a sudden we're going to bring all these funky blitzes on first down too, not just third down as well. So just, it was, I thought it was, like you said, Chuck, it was house money for the Bears this season. And you get proof of concept, you buy goodwill, not just from like owners, but fan base, like, hey, trust what we're doing now. Now you're aligned head coach, GM, quarterback for the first time, it feels like forever in Chicago. So just, feeling pretty dang good about where it's all going. We'll figure out where the stadium's at. You know, Kevin Warren's got to figure that out. Maybe they got to hang that over there
at some point.
But feeling pretty good. But any kind of closing thoughts on like just where the Bears are at, Matt? Maybe something they might need to add into this offseason before we kind of round it out with the Rams?
Yeah. You never want to fall in the trap of, well,
you know, we just said it's a house money season, right? But you never want to fall in the trap of like, oh, they'll be right back here, you know, because we've seen how that can, how that cannot be true. That being said, if there's ever a team that you do want to bet on, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and this is something, Nate, you and I have been talking about all year, this is one of those teams, because not only is the quarterback in his second year, you know, there's so many young players on this offense. Obviously, that might, it's going to stink if that does end up being DJ Moore's last play as a Chicago Bear, but he's the guy that might not be on this roster next year. You know, maybe Cole Kmet, that's something to look at. But other than that, it's rookie tight end, rookie receiver, second year receiver, rookie running back, and in addition to what they have with DeAndre Swift, Kyle Manungai was awesome in this game. So you do think that, like, progression's not linear. That's not the first time, or it's not the last time I'm going to say that on this show. Progression's not linear. You could take a step back. Any of these guys could, you know, hit a bump in the road in their second or third season. That does happen. But this is an offense that you would think could be even better next year, at least more consistent. Like, the highs are high. The lows can still be low with this unit. And if that can just sort of normalize somewhere in the middle here, and you keep Dennis Allen around on defense, you can kind of build up some of that too, maybe get more of an organic pass rush instead of just what they do as a blitzing unit. I think that you can continue to push forward and feel like, yeah, maybe the Bears won't, you know, we can't just pencil them into the conference championship game next season or anything like that, but they can still be one of the best and most competitive teams in the league.
It's Caleb, just like, he can do the hardest things. Obviously, we've seen those kind of hero plays the last couple of weeks, and it's starting to kind of color in between the lines. The run game was really kind of doing that as well, hitting explosives, being efficient. And it's like, just don't stop. Like, I think the scariest team to ever look at was they're not exactly the same makeup, but the Brian Daboll the first year with the Giants. And they're like, yeah, this is great. Let's just run it all back. And it was like, no. You got to start kind of tweaking things and kind of layering and adding on to it. And I don't think they're going to be complacent with what they have. I'm bullish. I've kind of have been this whole process, but even more so, like you guys keep saying, the kind of proof of concept with it. Chuck, what about you? Anything kind of add on to maybe in the Bears thoughts, maybe for this offseason, anything to add? Like, kind of.
I do think if you're a Bears fan, it's kind of fair to be frustrated with, I guess, not finishing drives, because if you start looking through some of the numbers, the Bears, they had 9% of their drives didn't get a first down, compared to almost 40% for the Rams. They averaged 2.09 first downs per drive. If you put that for like a league-wide number, that'll be fifth in the NFL this year, also higher than their own mark of 1.96 first downs per drive. But 27% turnover rate, man. Like, you were moving the ball. They average almost 40 yards per drive, compared to 25 for the Rams. But they just couldn't get it done, man. That's where I think it'd be fair to be frustrated if you're a Bears fan. It's like, you were doing a lot of nice stuff the whole game, but couldn't quite punch it through. Maybe chalk it up to youth. Maybe you just chalk it up to being unlucky. Probably the latter. And hope you get back next year, because when we watch these games, I'm reminded of Dan Campbell when he was upset after the Lions lost to the 49ers in the NFC title game. He was like, man, like, this hurts so bad because you might never get back. Haven't seen the Lions back to that point yet. Nope. So you can't take any of this for granted. I think it's fair to be frustrated, even if you're hopeful about the future, because, man, they really did move the ball well today, but couldn't quite close when they needed to.
It feels like they're kind of very – have to take that traditional next step of finishing. They came back from a lot this year, but kind of that – just clean things up. Really, that's what it is, in situations. And that's what football, NFL is. So situations, red zone, third downs, fourth downs. Even just looking at the fourth downs, Caleb sails the first pass. He gets pressure on his face by Kobe Turner. They're picking on the left guard. The Rams were, because Joe Tooney was on left tackle. And bring the five pass rushers. Kobe Turner gets his face. He sails the pass. Okay, misses that fourth down. Then they have the one short yardage, where I want to say, and I don't, this is tough for me, but I think DJ Moore was supposed to fold in there and get the safety. But it could have been a pass off thing. So, but that's just how I looked at it. But these just these little minor details, they're so close. And then the fourth and goal, when Omar Spites had that little PBU, like on that one, that was a classic play. It's drive angle. And Caleb should just hit the crosser. He should just take the simple answer. And it's like, okay, so I get the hero place, and there's just stuff. They like took the team that I felt maybe the best about this entire season from bell to bell and took them to the overtime and probably could have won this game and should have won this game. You got to feel good for a team that a lot of people didn't think would be in the playoffs, like just to end up this way. I mean, it's just feeling good. Just kind of reset their stuff, figure out a few positions. Like you guys already mentioned, DJ Moore amongst others, and you got good defensive tackle class. I'll say that, Bears fans as well. Kind of shore up some of the interior defense. That'll help you guys out as well. Rams, though, final thoughts on them as we go into next week. Any weaknesses? It felt like McClendon got picked on a little bit. Kind of felt like that, but just, you know, Chuck, I love that reaction. What you, how are you feeling about the Rams? Kind of just as we kind of before we do a deep dive preview show later this week, but just how are you feeling right now, Sunday night?
I mean, if they keep playing like they've looked recently, I guess basically since they lost to Seattle, about a month ago, you look at that game against the Falcons that they lost. Then they had the Panthers game last week, and that wasn't their best work. Now tonight, obviously not their best game. If you walk into Seattle playing like that, it's going to be over by halftime, bro. That defense is going to shove them in a locker if they continue to play like this. And I'm a little worried because it's been a little bit of a funk for a little bit now. That game against the Cardinals week 18 was nice, but three of the four games that you played in your past month have not been really impressive performances.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel quite right. Matt, you feel the same?
Yeah, it's just, like I said, I don't think this was McVay's best game either. And that's sort of you can sort of spin this like multiple different ways, right? Where coming out of the Panthers game, it was special teams and secondary. And I think that the secondary played better today than they did that week. But then obviously, again, I'm coming out of this thinking like they bungled some situations. I didn't love the first half play calling. It felt like you didn't even need it to be this close at the end. I think that if they had just kind of put their, and it's a hypothetical, it's like hindsight analysis. Mm-hmm. But to me, I think this wasn't the best coached game that the Rams had played. And, all this talk coming into it about the McVay tree, Peter Schrager had this, right? All the McVay tree's really upset at Ben Johnson. I'm like,
the Hornets nest now, man.
Yeah, great. Well, I think maybe you overthought it coming into this game, because like I said, it wasn't his best performance in this one. But that you can either take that one or two ways, and that there's multiple problems that they need to worry about, or it's like, all right, well, we cleaned one thing up from wild card round, then another thing sprung up here in divisional round. Maybe we get it all sorted out in conference championship. But I'm with Chuck, man. Like, you play like you did these last 2 weeks, you go into Seattle, it could get ugly in a hurry, because that's the Hornet's nest right there. And like, you come close to that thing, all them Hornets are coming out at you.
See, Seattle. Yeah, we're going to talk about them. Oh my God, they're putting everybody in the freaking lion tamer. It's unbelievable. Sharpshooter. Last question, Matt. Where'd you have Loveland in Dynasty? Did you guys do a show this week on that? Where do you have Loveland in Dynasty ranks, Colson Loveland for the Bears? I felt like, didn't you do a Dynasty show this Wednesday?
Yeah, well, we do like a lot of these kind of user-based questions, and I feel like nobody's really asking about Colson Loveland in Dynasty, because it's like as high as you can go, man. He's so good. He wasn't perfect in this game. I think everybody had all the Bears pass catchers had like high moments and low moments, and that's kind of been the story of the Bears. Yeah. It's funny, I think we talked about this last week, Nate, where of course the Jaguars season ended on an in-breaking route over the middle. Like, they kind of died as they lived, and the Bears died on like a wide receiver quarterback miscommunication, wide receiver error type play. They died as they lived here on this one. So Colson Loveland wasn't perfect in this one, but I actually thought the play that he impressed me the most on was the Odunze outbreaking route. I think it was like the sail route. It was a great catch by Odunze, but Loveland is like singled up blocking Jared Verse on that play on the backside. Like, that was so impressive by him. That was so impressive. And that just goes to, and that's obviously not going to get you fantasy points from like a dynasty standpoint, but it just goes to show like that is a complete player. He should never leave the field. He should be there. You can match him up against corners. You can match him up against linebackers. Yeah, he was such a great pick. And definitely, I think some people want some September takes back on the Colson Loveland selection. Nobody on this show, but other people out there might. Yeah.
A lot of Loveland supporters here. No, I think that's a great way to say it. It's like how they died was some receiver miscommunication. Because you got to remember last week, there was the dig route. Luther Burden threw the mailbox hand up, which is unbelievable from a rookie. And also, Kyle Williams did the exact same thing on a play in the game that we are about to talk about. But no, the Rams move on to the Seahawks. And now we're going to move on to the Sunday morning game, which was the Patriots Sunday morning for me. It was noon. It was great. It's the perfect time for football. I love it. I don't get that kick time much anymore on the West Coast, so I enjoyed it. Patriots win 28-16. We had an octopus of turnovers, 8 total turnovers in some slop weather at Foxborough. 5 by the Texans. Most in a playoff game since the 2015 NFC Championship game. The Cardinals and the... Oh, my God. I remember that game. Cardinals-Panthers. Wow. That was just my brain.
Yeah,
just
baby. Yeah. I'll never forget it.
Oh man, that was wow! My brain just like just rattled terrible. Right there. It was just like, yeah, that just hit me. It was like the guy in Ratatouille when he tastes the Ratatouille. It was just all just hit me right there. But this game was a story of quarterbacks. I felt like having an adventure of a day from on both sides of the ball. Drake May with my friend Charles here has a new nickname for him that I'm sure he can't wait to unleash. Having some moments of dropping the ball, and then CJ Stroud. Oh, no. Spiraling under pressure and under the blitz from the Patriots. The Patriots defense again. I mean, just stacking these defensive performances in the playoffs gets you feeling different about them. But Matt, overall, Patriots take this one 28-16. What's your takeaways from this game? Because a lot happened.
Like, tough to watch at some points for the Texans offense specifically. So I almost like want to come back to them because put them aside for a second. The Patriots though. Yeah, definitely not a perfect outing from them, but I mean, some incredible high moments. I mean, the Kayshon Booty touchdown, that was pretty good coverage by Derek Stingley. This is an incredible throw and an even better catch from Kayshon Booty. Stevenson had some moments. Yeah. Will Campbell had a long day at left tackle. So like their offense was not perfect. That's for sure. But that defense has shown up shown up big these last couple of weeks. And even though this one was tight at different points, it just felt like New England was consistently in control of it. Almost kind of the way that the Texans and Steelers game felt the week prior, where the score was close at one point, but I mean, that just felt like Houston's ball game. Today, this just felt like one team doesn't have it on one side of the ball to such a degree that I don't think they were coming back in this one. And I think New England felt like they were winning for a long, long stretch here.
I know. It really didn't feel like anything was going right for the Texans. Chuck, how'd you feel about this one? How do you feel just overall with the Texans right now? Because I thought the defense, obviously, Wayne Anderson took over at times, Danielle Hunter, but man, just Stroud, this offense, it feels just empty inside.
It was brutal. And like it was pretty bad on both sides. It was bad on both sides.
Like line punch rough for a sec.
Yeah, the Patriots they averaged 16.5 yards per drive. Texans averaged about 16.1. Texans actually averaged more first downs per drive than the Patriots did in this game. But shocking. You know, just total slop. The Patriots, they didn't even average one first down per drive, 0.87. The Texans were a little over one. So both offenses kind of got absolutely shoved into a locker. And if I was a Texans defender, I would be so damn mad. Like they got, what was it? 3 strip sacks on May? At least 2, who has been dubbed Mini Mitts May for the foreseeable future. If you include the playoffs.
Until further notice. Until
he grows his hands, because he's got 11 strip sacks this season. 11. Like, that's way too many.
Pepper going on.
Yeah, that's way too many. And, you know, the Texans, like, they got the ball on the ground, and they forced 3 turnovers, but your team had 5. So, I don't know what's going to happen to CJ Stroud. I don't know if he needs to, like, be plugged, like, unplugged and plugged back in. You know, blow on the cartridge type deal, but he is not playing good football right now. So that was like one of the worst games I've seen in a long time. Like, that was Ryan Lindley stuff. And I know the weather was bad, but the other quarterback didn't play that bad. So you got to get that one under wraps. That was embarrassing.
Matt.
I've got a stat on just how bad it was. CJ Stroud, 10th lowest EPA per dropback for a starting quarterback in a playoff game since 2007, 418th out of 427. That was before the two guys who played in the Rams Bears. And spoiler alert, neither one of them are showing up lower than CJ Stroud in the list. There's a few, I mean, there's interesting names on this list, by the way. He's 10th from the bottom is CJ Stroud. The worst part about it for Texans fans is there's 2 other Texans quarterbacks in the bottom 10. Brian Hoyer and Brock Osweiler. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's
I thought there was going to be a TJ Yates in there.
No, shockingly, TJ Yates avoids it. Yeah, Brian Hoyer from the 2015 season, Brock Osweiler from the 2016 season. You mentioned the DeLome game. I mean, Stroud went full DeLome. You never want to go full DeLome. He's in here. And then it's like, it's the Aaron Rodgers game from last week, which, Nate, you pointed out is the lowest for a starting quarterback in a playoff game. It's Drew Brees on his last leg, Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl win against the Carolina Panthers in the 2015 season. So you can look at that and be like, hey, CJ's next to some legendary names there, just not quite in the season that you wanted. Drew Brees' last season, Peyton Manning's final game in the NFL. So, yeah, it was a rough game. Minus 0.47 EPA per dropback for CJ Stroud here. 1.1 adjusted yards per attempt.
He spiraled. Like, it's palpable. Like, you feel it. It's not the first time. He did it last week, too. In the Pittsburgh game, they were driving in the red zone. He threw that pick. I mean, it was like, there's no reason to be doing that in that game flow. And he's way too smart to be doing that. Against pressure today, he went 2 of 16 for 18 yards and one pick, 1.1 yard per attempt, a 13.5 QB rating. Versus the blitz, 6 of 18, 67 yards. I've seen this guy dice up the blitz, but it's not playing like that. I mean, he doesn't trust it. And on top of it, it's just that he tries to get it all back. I thought Tom Brady on Saturday made the great point. Some people made fun of him. Like, there's not a 17-point play. But what he was trying to say was saying, like, hey, you can't get it all back in one play. And this is
–
quarterback play in the NFL is as much about damage mitigation as it is about hunting the big plays. I'll talk about hunting the big plays all the time, but sometimes you just got – you can't make a bad play worse. Like, that's what it is. The pick six, that's making a bad play worse. Dalton Schultz getting hurt had the biggest trickle down effect in this game than I ever would have thought of. I mean, he did. So like, he goes out, the backup goes in, like Cade Stover had some like just rough moments. I think he just falls over. I don't even know if it was him on that one, but falls over. Stroud sees him fall over and then he gets the pressure in his face. And then he tries a hero throw, like just tries to flick it up. I saw what he was trying to do. I think it was to Hutchinson, but it was like, no, just dirt it. Just dirt it. Yeah. Like it's not. These games are rock fights and weather. It's all about, hey, it's not a right track meet. It's like, you got to pick your five chances. And that's when you go there, boom, just eat it, whatever. Next drive, our defense is snuffing them anyway. So, and on top of it, like Drake May is not excused from this either. The fumble he had, Ramondre Stevenson went the wrong way. It was a duo run, goes the wrong way. And then he tucks it and runs it, which, it's like, I get it. You're trying to get some most, but usually what you do is you get back to the line of scrimmage and you go down. That's kind of the rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. I'm a mere mortal. Drake May is a lot more athletic than some of those quarterbacks that get taught that. But still, it's the NFL. Just kind of go down. It's not the game flow for this. I don't know. That's just how I viewed it. I mean, but Stroud had pick when he got tipped high. He had one near the sideline to Carlton Davis. He had the failed squirrel route to Carlton Davis, but it just spiraled and spiraled. Thank God D'Amico Ryans goes, no, we have his back. It's like, I get that and everything, because people are saying he should be benched at half, which I don't know if either of you guys think, I don't know if you can speak up if that thought ever came through your guys' mind, even if they were spiraling and everything. But I don't know. Hats off to the Patriots defense for playing like this 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. The Texans defense, because I think, man, the more you kind of dig through some of these numbers, like they should be like white hot mad. Like the fact that Will Anderson had the grace to say like, yep, you were still with CJ. He's our guy. The Patriots had 15 drives today. They only got a first down on 6 of them, okay? So 9 drives, they failed to get a first down. Those 9 drives started at the 36-yard line. So, like, you had good field position. Yeah. On those 9 drives, they ran 26 plays for 5 yards. 5 yards, 26 plays. Dude, you beat the hell out of them, and you were screwed by this guy just point-shaving the whole game. Like, it's crazy. Like, they didn't get a first down on 60% of their drives. 60%, they failed to get 10 yards.
And, you said they had 15 drives?
Kind of throw that away.
They
had 15 total drives.
Patriots had 15 successful plays. So they had one successful play per drive. That's
like the fact they were even in this game at the end.
Yeah.
The fact they had a chance to win this game, I think, just speaks volume to the defense. And like that's just so bad by Stroud, just to find yourself in the position where you're kind of throwing a performance like that away. So he's got to lock back in, because we know he's better than this, right? We all know he's better. Than this, so let's go.
That's the thing. Like, he was good as a rookie. That they'll never let anybody gaslight you. You know, he was legitimately good as a rookie. And this is what I said earlier, like progression is not linear. It's just, he's the great example of that. Like, had this awesome rookie year, and then it's just gotten worse progressively every single season afterwards. And yeah, obviously he went through hell in his first couple seasons after that, where it's pass blocking errors, issues last year with communication. They can't pick up a stunt, they can't pick up a blitz. And then this year it's been better, but it hasn't been that much better. That doesn't excuse his own individual play. Like, we can say that, yeah, CJ Stroud still has the potential to be a good quarterback, and you see that sometimes in isolation, but the product is still just like not good enough here. And I thought Aikman said it well at the end of this game, that like, he has regressed from the end of that rookie season, and they've got to figure out why, and it's got to change, like, period, end of story. Because you're getting to that time here where you're going to pick up his fifth year option. That's a no-brainer. Even the Panthers are picking up Bryce Young's fifth-year option. That makes sense. It's such a good financial deal for you as a team. But I mean, my God, like, you've got to figure out the root cause here, and you got to figure it out quick. Otherwise, you're going to waste an unbelievable defense, and you might have already done it, because we know the defense is not sticky year to year. If any team's going to do it, it's this group. They're really well coached. They're very talented, but. God, yeah, I'm with Charles. If I was a Texans defender, I might not have had the grace that some of those guys did after the game. You know, Will Anderson, first among them.
He's like an adrenaline junkie. I think it's like, remember the first year, rookie year, and again, you don't always like to say, oh, it happened in rookie year, but like the Browns playoff game. Remember just all the shot plays they were hitting? It was like, I remember Dalton Schultz got one. And I'm sure he's just like chasing that high. He's like chasing the dragon. Like, he's just like, oh, it was so much fun. Like, our defense, I'm going to hit haymaker after haymaker. And as opposed to like, you have to win ugly sometimes. Like, yeah. That's just how you have to dick and duck and just make the ugly plays and just get a couple first downs. And you're not going to score every drive. But as long as you score one more point, that's how you have to win. And I think he's got in his head that he has to chase what he did his first year, where it was like the defense was good, but it wasn't this. And he was just, you know, and was just be able to make all these hero plays, even with a poor run game that they had. It was a lot of frustrating stuff that I thought was happening. It feels stunted. Aikman kind of got on it as well, but that's what it just feels to me. It's just like, I've seen him just be so much smarter at this and fine. And one of the guys that progresses well and sees things I haven't seen other guys see. And then he's just like, just making rookie mistakes, but I'm going to say rookie mistakes, younger than that mistakes. I will say he's 24. He's the same age as Burrow when he got drafted. He's 20 months younger than Bo Nix. So it's like, all right, Nico Collins is out. The O-line is still not great. They improved. They're still not great. Those are the other sides of that. I did like the headline I saw tonight, Pat Stymie, Shaky Stroud. I'll get to the Patriots side. They finished with a 30% success rate, 30% passing success rate, had 10 successful passing plays, 4 were explosives. It was all boom bust. Will Campbell, you mentioned him, Matt. 4 pressures, but 2 were sacks, 2 were quick, 2.38 time to pressure. Willie Anderson had a strip sack where his get off was 0.41 seconds. And that play was just, a classic, like, queen on the chessboard theory doesn't matter when these guys are on the field, like Will Anderson, because on that play, technically the Patriots are right and Drake May was fine. It was empty, 1-2-3 hitch, ball out, and they got stripped. In theory, in football theory, that's fine. 1-2-3 ball out, you're fine. No pass rusher should, in theory, get to you in time. And now he gets there, he gets a strip sack on it. And that just shows how incredible these Texans defenders were playing. But Chuck, what did you kind of think of the Patriots offense today? I know we kind of just mentioned that, like, kind of up and down. I mentioned the success rate stuff, but May, anything kind of add on with them before we kind of move on with this?
Like the moments where it was clicking, like, he was pretty strong, on some of those drives. I think the drives where they did gain a first down, the 6 drives where they gained a first down, he averaged 0.74 EPA per dropback. So again, like you said, it was all or nothing, mostly nothing from both teams today. But when he was good, it was some really good stuff. And obviously, like, the catch that Keyshawn Booty made in the rain, like, one-handed with Derek Stingley on him. That was unbelievable. Like, somehow in my third or fourth NFL season, he's become the guy that everyone said he was going to be, like, 7 years ago when he was 18 years old at LSU. It's pretty interesting to kind of see that development curve for him. But I do feel like, though, this game was kind of like what we talked about in the preview, where one team was just picking top five and the other team has had like years to build out this defense with blue chip talent. And you did see that at times, especially like you said, getting home on empty in 3 seconds. Like that's like a blue chip play. And Danielle Hunter had moments today. There were times like when it was overwhelming, but when you have a quarterback like that, you just eventually something's going to pop for you. And they were able to figure that out. I still am worried about like, okay, now that you go to Denver, are you going to have like the same talent deficiencies pop up in the trenches? Because that's a tough way to live like 2 weeks in a row. And it's not the same offensive line that Buffalo has like at all. So that might be an advantage for Denver. So I'm still interested to see like how far they can kind of carry this, because I still look at this roster. I'm like, man, you could upgrade a whole lot of positions with a whole lot of talent. And it would just be really incredible for like this team to get to the Super Bowl this year.
Matt, I'm going to ask you about Booty, of course. That sounds weird. But can you pull up, producers, can you guys pull up that the target chart for May real quick? Look at the left side of this. Lassiter. That's the side that Kamari Lassiter plays. Look at that left sideline. Oh, yeah. Nothing's going on over here. Lassiter Island. They tried over and over. And that's how I kind of thought. I thought deep balls would be the way that you get after this Texas defense. And that's what happened on the last play to Booty. It was 989. That's two verticals and an inside vertical. But no, I wanted to ask Kayshon Booty, who had several explosives today, a lot of slant flats from the Patriots today. They had two touchdowns and two big plays to Booty on slant flat. How do you stack them up now? Like after looking at this whole season, how real do you feel this is? Is it sticky? Like kind of just the qualities of everything, but because it's become just so consistently every week, he's just having standout performances.
I think you might be overstating it and saying every single week, because there are definitely times where he has.
There was one where he had a dud, especially when I started him as a flex, and that was great. But much better than what he used to be, especially even last year, he was so inconsistent, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, dude, last year he was so inconsistent, and going into that season, he was probably on the roster bubble. And, you know, in his rookie season, wasn't he suspended in his rookie season for, like, obviously he's a hugely transformed, not just player, but also person. I think the reason that it feels like he has been more consistent is because when he hits big, and for that's the role that he is in. Like, when he's going to have these big moments, it's going to be – you know, low usage, high yield. That's what you kind of want out of Kayshon Booty as your almost exclusive X receiver. And like, there's times where he's going to be a little bit sacrificial, you know, to open things up for Pop Douglas, who had a big play against man coverage on this one. Pop Douglas has been like smoking man coverage in small doses all season. Like, again, another guy that's been low usage, high yield. Diggs has been really good. Diggs had a great catch in this one too. So there are times where Booty's going to be like opening things up for other people and just clearing space. Like I said, the sacrificial X receiver stuff. But unlike some of those guys, you know, an MVS or somebody like that, in that sort of bucket of wide receivers, when you've been gone to him in these high degree of difficulty moments, he has converted. I think actually there's more potential than just playing that role for him. And I think you saw a little bit of it in this game where you mentioned some of the slants, like some of the quick hitters. I actually like to see him play a little bit more flanker, like move around the formation a little bit, because I thought he had a better feel for space as a collegiate player than just somebody who runs out an X receiver. Yeah, I think he's more of like that type of player than just somebody who lines up at X and, you know, runs the Alec Pierce route tree. I mean, obviously, he can do that, but I think to get like more consistent production out of him, like for him to be more consistent, the production to be stickier week to week, then I think that's where you'd look for him.
I did laugh. You might mention the slants, but no, the Pop Douglas touchdown against Cover Zero and the two Booty plays before the Stephon Diggs touchdown, they all came on slant flat, just different variations of them. I just kind of laughed. It was like, you go, I mentioned just like, oh, the playoffs is so cool. You don't know what blitzes are going to come. You don't know what plays are going to dial up. And it's just slant flat. Just the most basic play. It was like, that was the Patriots kind of just, oh, yeah, here we go. This is the ace and hole. This is where we're going to get you a slant flat. Just, it's called Dragon, by the way, in case you don't care. Double slants is Lion. Slant flat's Dragon, in case you guys don't care. West Coast terminology. But anyways, any parting thoughts on these guys? I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the Texans. Texans feel more interesting because the Patriots Broncos breakdown is gonna be a lot of fun later this week, but maybe just anything, one thought on the Texans, maybe just like question marks outside of just Stroud, offensive line, did you guys feel about the offense? Chuck, just one last thought before we kind of move on to the next game.
get healthy. I think this one made a big difference. You've got Nico Collins out there. So it sucks, but the unfortunate part about the postseason is you got to start from scratch. And hopefully they'll be a little bit healthier next year, because I think those injuries, they hurt them a lot too. But there's really nothing else to say about Stroud. Just don't do that again.
Yeah.
Never do that again.
How about this? Here's a more interesting question. Who do you feel better about right now, January 18th, the Jaguars or the Texans?
The Texans. They have the coolest defensive line I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. And all those guys
Matt, are same so question.
Young on defense still. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they have the best unit. Bet on the best unit.
Yeah. I think I'll go Jags. I don't know. Just like the same problems every single year crop up for Houston's offense, like pass protection issues. Can we have like an above average run game for this team once? I know. Like that would be great. So yeah, I'll go Jags there, but it's not like a confident statement.
Yeah, I'm slightly going Jags, but it's not. I'm with you, Matt. It's not very confident because I don't know. They've shown that they can mitigate their weaknesses better.
Yeah.
While the Texans' weaknesses is like, oh, there they are again. There's the line. Oh, yep, there's Stroud Smart. Like, you know, like it, with the Jags, it was like, oh, okay. Like, you guys can shore this up, and there's maybe just more splashes there. Kind of feel about the same, if I'm being honest. But I don't know. I think that's a little bit more interesting. AFC South's going to be fun to talk about. Unless Matt Nagy goes to the Titans.
Oh, it's happening, baby. Right, let's get ready. It's happening.
20 interview 30 guys to end up with the guy the GM's buddies with. All right, we're going to go on to the AFC West. The third time these teams played, we're about to get another NFC West battle in the championship game, but the Seahawks drop a 40 burger on the 49ers, start off hot with a Rashid Shaheed kick return touchdown. Might have mentioned to you guys again that the Seahawks had the second best DVOA, special teams DVOA in the NFL this year, only behind the New York Jets, showed up again in the playoffs. But Kenneth Walker, big day on the ground, puts up over 100, three touchdowns. The Seahawks defense, though, I mean, just unbelievable what they're doing to this team. Brock Purdy was running for his life and running for any type of light that he could see throwing wise. He traveled 413 yards on his 33 dropbacks. Brock Purdy's average time to throw is 4.24 seconds, which is the longest mark by any quarterback with at least 10 passes in the Next Gen Stats era. So that's at least 2016. That's including playoffs. He was just running around trying to find something because the Seahawks were snuffing it all out. Chuck, what do you think about the Seahawks and what they did to the 49ers? I know I don't want to say this is kind of what we expected. You predicted that the 49ers would get skunked in this game. And I even sent this to you on Blue Sky. I said, I'm going to give you the Hail Mary out of just principle because it felt like a skunk that the Seahawks close. Did in the divisional round.
This felt worse than the last game. My Hail Mary predictions was that they would score fewer points than they did last time. They scored three, got six this time. So I was technically wrong, but like spiritually right. You guys ever seen a box score stat line that looks like it hurts? Because the 49ers, if you look at design runs, and I pulled out garbage time, which True Media doesn't start until 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, which this game was well over by then. But you pull out garbage time, the 49ers, they had 18 carries for 47 yards on design carries. 18 carries for 47 yards. Like, I see something like that. Like, dude, you went home with bruises that day. Christian McCaffrey had 11 carries for 35 yards on those. Just absolutely stuffed into a locker. But I didn't find myself bored during this. Like, it's the kind of dominance that is, like, enthralling to watch because every single play, like, dudes are getting tossed out the club. The first fourth down that they went for. Juszczyk did the Juszczyk option. And they were all over
blown
it.
Like, up.
They were at the sideline before he even pitched the ball. I was like, this defense, like, they're so keyed in. And, you know, it's not just – because obviously Mike McDonald gets a lot of credit, and he should because, you know, he's been the mastermind behind this. But, like, the players are absolutely incredible. For all the, you know, the hype and deserved love that Houston's defensive line gets, this one is playing just as well as they are, but in a different way. It's not, like, the most explosive, you know, we got roadrunners off the edge and we're coming to kill you. It's just, no, like, from the first play, we're going to put you in a chokehold and we'll let you out when it's over. And that's what happened in this game. They keep doing it over and over and over again. And man, like what, just a physically dominating performance. Like that's one where you're like, I don't know how we're ever going to beat those guys. Cause they're just stronger, bigger, faster, more prepared than us.
I had a friend text me before the game. He's a 49ers fan. And he said, I feel like everyone's just hung up on that week 18 game. You know, so-and-so was hurt. I just think that something happened. And I was being nice. And I didn't want to text back. I was like, dude, it could have been worse if that game played out how it was. And so I didn't text anything back. And then as soon as the game ended, he goes, you were right, man. It was just, it's just a talent deficiency. Like, it felt more like a college football playoff team. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, we got a shot against, well, this year, Indiana, you know, and then they just blow you out of the water because they have all these teams. But traditionally, like an Ohio State or an Alabama or Georgia going against those other teams that are tiered below. 9 different defenders for the Seahawks recorded a pressure. They only missed 5 tackles. It was Nwosu had 4 pressures. DeMarcus Lawrence had 3 pressures. Leonard Williams had 3 pressures. Like Byron Murphy had 3 pressures. All those guys are different body types too. That's what's so cool about the Seahawks defense. They got one of each. Just one of each. Variety pack of every type of ghoul and goblin I want on my defense. Matt, how did you feel about the Seahawks and what they put together in this game? Any thoughts on their offense as well?
Yeah, I have 2 big thoughts about this game. Number one, I'm so glad Charles said this. Like, this was a fun game to watch. You are finding out this postseason who you follow is into football and who is into the reality show called Quarterback. All right, that's what you're finding out this postseason. That's what you're finding out. And this game will tell you a lot about it. The second point I have is more of a Niners-related one. I can talk about the Seahawks offense in a little bit, but I was thinking about the Niners with this when this game was going on, because I had a similar experience, Nate, where one of my my wife told me, she has a friend that's a Seahawks fan, and she's like, I missed I guess she was texting her. She's like, I missed that Rashid Shaheed touchdown because I was putting my kid to sleep. I was like, you can text her back and go ahead and say, like, you can just go to bed yourself. Like, this one's already over. Like, this is over. This is done. This is finished. It's kaput. And that's where, like, typically you get these teams, like, you lose in the postseason. We've got to have all these think pieces about, like, what needs to happen or what went wrong. Niners, like, you ran out of road here. What it is. Like, come on. Like, Kittle's
Kyle
out.
Kyle Shanahan, coach Pearsall, of the year, and we'll just move on to next year.
Pearsall's got on. 3. You can probably only have, what, like 2 PCLs in your entire body? He's, like, screwed up 5 of them this entire season. You know, Christian McCaffrey, finally the EMF frequency thing got him in this game. You know, because he's got the shoulder stinger in this one. He literally, he went home with bruises. He really did go home with some kind of shoulder stinger after being healthy all season, sucking the life force out of the EMF facility or whatever all year long. So, yeah, the defense can't stop Kenneth Walker. That was my only takeaway from, like, the Seahawks offense that was interesting is, Nate, I said this to you in, like, November. I was like, what if the Seahawks are saving Kenneth Walker? Like, they're keeping him fresh for a December to remember. I was 1 month too early. I know Charbonnet got injured.
There it is.
Ignore that. They kept him fresh here for January, and he looked like the best player on the field. And this is a guy that's been, like, a bit kind of afterthought player. But not only Kenneth Walker, too, I think the offensive line deserves a lot of credit, too. There were a couple of plays. I think, he scored 3 touchdowns, so I can't remember if it was the second or his third, where it was just, like, teach tape picture perfect outside zone. Like, if you're a coach, you're installing an outside zone system this offseason, like, you pull up that one Kenneth Walker rush to the left side, be like, that's how we're gonna do this, boys. So it was a great performance by Seattle all the way around. And yeah, Niners, you just ran out of rope.
Yeah, and the blue chips they do have are on IR. I mean, I know Fred Warner was coming back at any day now, as they said, but defensive player of the year candidate is on IR. Another one, Nick Bosa on IR. First round pick that's supposed to help against the run game on IR. And I mean, that's just, it is what it is. Those are supposed to be your 3 best players, at least up front. Bryce Huff, like, I was interested in this 49ers defense throughout the year because I was like, ooh, Mykal Williams, Nick Bosa, they bounce and they get Bryce Huff in there. Mykal Williams can kick inside. Bryce Huff is not meant to, like, hold up against the run. And even this is just one stat, and I'm not just isolating him. He only played 12 run against the run 12 times. But when he was on the field, the Seahawks averaged 6.6 yards. When he was off the field, they averaged 4.6 yards when they're running. He's not meant to hold up against the run on those outside routes. That's why those zone routes can just pop off because they just got nobody to set the edge. When you got A.J. Barner moving DNs, A.J. Barner's a great blocker. But, like, it should be a stalemate as opposed, like, a good tight end blocking against a good DN or, like, a solid DN is like a stalemate. It's not like you're going to pancake him. But when the tight end is getting movement, that's a problem for your defense, because that means, oh, we can just keep doing this with no help. And that means the tackle can go to the linebacker, et cetera, et cetera. But I was looking at the Seahawks defense, and this was so cool. I thought, you know, the Seahawks offense too, just had moments. I thought there's some cool design stuff, but it kind of had like an epiphany with Nick Manuori and Devin Witherspoon. And they play so much in too high. And what do Shanahan offenses like to attack? We always just kind of make fun of what's anticipation, what's not. Like, they throw a blind, they just throw it to a hash, like quarterbacks in the system, because they're attacking linebackers and intermediate defenders over and over. And that's where these high lows are working. That's who you're baiting, whether it's a linebacker, whether it's a safety down or a slot. You're trying to bait them in these high lows. That's where the Stafford no lookers come in. And when you have two aces at slot, and I think Witherspoon is more of an overall player, Manuori has flashes and he can get caught a couple times. But you have those two guys, and there go the dig routes. And that's why Purdy had to run around so much. He's waiting for the high lows to pop. And then there's these guys playing both spots. They're playing the under and the low and then the high. And then when Purdy gets back to the low, the pressure gets to him. That's just awesome defense with awesome players at every single spot. So, Chuck, you brought it up. That first fourth down when it got blown up, it was like DeMarcus Lawrence and everybody. It was like, oh, game over. Like that's how I felt. It was like, that's a play I've seen work for the 49ers time and time again. But any kind of additional thoughts on this game, like kind of just what they piled on, any other kind of closing thoughts with this team? Because it's just kind of, I want to move on to like the 49ers, maybe their offseason. Any thoughts on that too as well?
I guess maybe just a shout out to some of the individual players. Like, I'm not sure, because I feel like when we talked about the Seahawks defense, they've kind of just turned into like this conglomerate, you know, the Seahawks monolith defense. But like Byron Murphy has turned into one of the best defensive tackles in the league. Like,
yeah, baby.
Like he had a play, I think it might have been on that drive, or maybe it was another fourth down stop that they had early in the game, where like they're slanting inside. And he hits like a double team when he's slamming inside, splits a double team, stays on his feet, works back towards the gap he was originally in, makes a TFL in like three steps. I'm like, okay, like this is kind of ascended past something that I think, you know, even like we're used to seeing at the NFL level, where it's like when you play like college football or Madden and you have a dynasty and like all these guys have really high superstar potential devs, and you know, you kind of cheese the system so they all end up like 99s. That's what it feels like, where the development path for some of these recent first round picks or really any defensive player, they're all getting so much better. And it feels like if you go to this team and you end up here, you can reach like the pinnacle of what you're supposed to be. Because even Eamon Worry, we're looking at the pick like, what the hell is that? I mean, you know, this guy is
so much,
you know, he's an athletic. Right. But like when you go back to that South Carolina film, it's not good. Like there's a lot of there's a lot of poor stuff on there. When you look at like, why are you 6'3", 230, running a 4'3", getting drafted in the second round? And Mike McDonald said, you know what, I'm gonna fix this. And like he's already way better than he player than he was last year. So you start thinking about what's next for this defense, and it feels like pain and punishment for the NFC West for the next few years.
And also, the two of the offenses run these types of offenses, and then they have shown that they have it kind of dialed in, like what your staples are. Just before I have your closing thoughts too, Matt, that's the thing, is just that they're so well scouted. And I talk about this with quarterback development sometimes, that you see the next step with like accuracy and footwork when the mind kind of works fast and it lets the body kind of calm down. Same thing with these guys. All right, they run high, low, high, low, high, low. Okay, now I know what's coming. I'm not confused. I'm not missing any steps. I can play with anticipation as a defender as well. So kind of just want to continue that thought, Chuck. But any closing thoughts for you, Matt, on this game? Shout-outs, stray thoughts, asides, anything you got?
Yeah, Cardinals, maybe hire somebody not on this coaching tree. Like, you know, this McVay Shanahan coach. I know that's what you got to do at this point, but do we really need another Clay one Adams of these offenses getting put into the buzzsaw every single week by this Seahawks defense? I don't know. Yeah. They're like an amoeba. And I think that does end up sort of getting them all as one big conglomerate, like Charles said, you know, that we don't shout out individual players enough, except Eamon Worry is kind of the guy who gets the most love because he's the rookie. That's just kind of how it goes. But I think that is just that trust player. And like, hey, I know everyone around me is doing my job and I know what's coming. It allows them to almost be this amoeba like unit, which, God, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to beat this team.
Yeah. That's, again, that's the McDonald's scheme. And everyone's like, just copy the McDonald's scheme. It's like, yeah, just run everything and everything really well scouted. Yeah. And everybody knows exactly what they're doing at the right time and knows when to pass stuff off. Like, yeah, just run that scheme. Just copy that. Yeah, but no, I'm feeling really good about where the Seahawks are at. The 49ers, I think just my parting thoughts, the Juwan Jennings is a free agent, Brandon Ayuk saga. I'm sure Matt's going to have so many questions about the 49ers receiver room over the next few months. I think right. It's never ending. It's like them and the Bears,
receiver,
right?
Again. They can't, they must yeah, be they so do. Thrilled. I know. They could take a first round receiver and nobody would be mad at them about it. Cause this receiver is insane.
Paid
looking
one,
on
paid
right
another
now.
One. Oh, I know. Unbelievable. They should be adding bodies to the trenches. They're in the perfect range. There's right. good D tackle class. Kind of a good range for the offensive tackles, but yeah, might be losing Robert Saleh, Mac Jones trade bait. We'll talk about plenty of that stuff, but 49ers, I think we'll be back here competing next year as they hopefully stay healthy. Yeah, I'm not floating any conspiracy theories about it. Just stop drafting guys that were hurt in college. All right, we're going to move on to the last game, or which started as the first game. We're going Tarantino style. Broncos, Bills. This game lived in everybody's minds. It felt like the whole weekend. I couldn't wait for these games to start after all the discourse that happened in this game. Honestly, the Broncos win this game 33-30. And I feel like, again, Tarantino star, I got like where to begin. I might have to go reverse order. Bo Nix breaks his ankle on the game-winning drive. The Bills have 5 turnovers, including 4 by Josh Allen. The last one by Jaquan McMillan, wrestling the ball from Brandon Cooks, allegedly. Josh Allen was good, but also had bad. Had fumbles. He had interceptions. The Broncos hit some big plays. A lot happened in this game. A lot happened. I have stuff italicized to talk about referees, and particularly referee analysts that seem to keep popping up and not knowing anything in the heat of the moment. But Matt, what'd you think about the game that kicked off this weekend and kicked off a lot of discourse for the rest of the weekend? Knicks, sad news, but big win for the Broncos.
Yeah, honestly, I'm with you. I don't even know where to begin with a general toss to this game.
I actually tried to organize like how to like segue this game, and I was like this game was a lot, so let's just start with how it ended.
Yeah, I do think it is such a gut punch if you're the Broncos, if you're a Broncos fan. I mean, like, I got that notification that Bo Nix, you know, broke an ankle, out for the rest of the season. And I have no investment in the Broncos whatsoever. And I audibly said to myself in the living room, like, what the F? I mean, like, what an unbelievable thing to happen here. Peyton goes back up to the podium and has to break the news there. It's insane. So you're going to start Jarrett Stidham. I along with many others had fun online thinking about like which veteran quarterback can they dust off Colts, you know, Rivers style. Obviously that's not going to happen. They're going to roll with Jarrett Stidham. It's a good enough team to win, I think, with a backup quarterback, because they are really well rounded in other areas, but I don't know. That is going to be a tall task, and it's got to be one of the most, you know, up down experiences any fan base has ever had here. So, we'll obviously talk much more about the game in general. But to me, that was my first reaction, was just I can't remember something like that happening.
Yeah, Chuck, you were both teams kind of come away just empty and soulless, and really feeling as great as they did.
Dude, if I'm a Bills fan, I'm sick because, like, man, that. Should have been us. Like, we should have gotten past the Broncos, because when they came out the half, and Josh Allen, I mean, another guy who might need to unplug and get replugged back in and chill out and hang out for a second. The fumble coming out of halftime, you're still only down 23-10. That's why I was like, hey, hold on. Like, we've seen crazier things than, you know, 13-point deficit being erased in like 28 minutes of game time at the point. So they were able to storm back. You still had some of these awful turnovers, like the interception that he threw, on the long ball. I'm like, man, like, you have the arm to hit that. I don't know why you kind of like laid off on that, especially when you know like how fast those guys are closing on the back. And like, it's Denver secondary. It's not just like, you know, you're playing against the Jets or something like that. That was a little bit strange from him. And you still had a chance to get this done. And now to watch Denver play in the AFC title game with a quarterback that hasn't thrown a pass since 2023, that's got to stink. But you have some nice moments with the defense. You just kind of blew it on the last drive and way too many turnovers, obviously.
Yeah, turnovers. I mean, it was a classic Josh Allen experience. Like, I mean, a vintage Josh Allen experience. Kind of like you got all the good. I mean, the fumble before the half was the worst play of the game from him. But I don't care about some other plays. He had a miss to Dawson Knox. That wasn't as – it was a miss, but it wasn't as bad on film. But, like, that fumble at the end of the half was the worst play he had as a quarterback, as a football player, because it was just, like, no need. Again, don't make a bad play worse. It wasn't a bad play, but don't – there's no need in that kind of game flow. You got to kind of understand where you're at as a team and everything. This is where I will agree.
It was a bad situation, too. Like, did they even have timeouts in that? I don't think they had any timeouts coming out of that half.
You're not going to spike it there because there's no reason to spike it. You don't want to give them the ball back like you did. So, yeah, like, yeah, as soon as you scramble, you get back on the ball. If you get a playoff, good. If not, just go in the half. All right, cool. We tried. Try to get a chunk. And I get being aggressive with Josh Allen. Like, that doesn't oppose me, or I'm not opposed to that, like, the play call. But, like, Allen's got to just know better. And, again, it's like these guys, they just – they feel a lot of weight. He's throwing to freaking Brandon Cooks in the playoffs, who wasn't good enough to play for the Saints this year. You know, like, that. It's going like Keon Coleman against Patrick Surtain II. I get where you feel like you have to strain a little bit, but man, there was just some rough stuff. At the end of the half, that one, he had the launch throw in 2nd and 14 where he gets picked. That one too. I don't know if he's scared to overthrow in thin air of Denver, which some quarterbacks are. Like, not a me problem. This is a God problem where these guys, they lose the ball just sails on them because it's like, oh my God, it's like golfing sometimes. It's like, oh man, that's a 7-iron for me. I guess I gotta use a pitching wedge out here. You know, like, that was terrible. Some golfers are gonna get me a 9-iron. But it's just, you know, something of that sort. But it's just that I feel like the deep balls, obviously, plenty of people share these stats. I think he would 0-for on all the deep throws. Some of those receivers not doing anything, but some of those is just sailing on it, where he's just floating it too much. And this is the defense, you know, the Bills defense too. Like, they got gashed on that third down late. The Broncos were hit 6 explosives. Yeah, the TD on the jumbo bootlegs to the 6 offensive linemen, which tickled me. I thought that was fun. But then the shot play to Little Jordan Humphrey, where Darnell Savage gets broken off. You get the dig to Cortland Sutton, like I said, where they try to disguise. The double move to Mims, which again was against a backup corner who played like 5 snaps this entire season. And then he had another seam route that was really nice. I want to say it was to Mims as well. But that stutter and go TD against Dane Jackson. Yeah, that's who it was. He had 4 defensive snaps this year. And again, that's a matchup leak. And this is why I say against Bo Nix, one-on-ones, he's going to take the go route, the slot fade, and he's going to make you defend it. And they have enough guys to kind of make to punish you in that way. Also, got to say, Allen has bad moments. Laren Ogunjobi jumped off sides on a fumble on the first drive. Those 3 points would have mattered. Joey Bosa was incredibly sloppy this entire game. He missed a tackle early, should have been a TFL. And I think it was McLaughlin runs for, you know, like a first down or like a long gain. He has a penalty late on a late hit. Doesn't get any pressure. The Bills didn't get any pressure at all this entire freaking game. he got pressured. Bo Nix got pressured 10 times on 50 dropbacks, wasn't sacked. Only 3 quick pressures on a whole bunch of dropbacks. I thought Sean Payton had a great game plan moving the pocket left and right, left and right. Nix made enough throws, had a couple misses, but I thought he made enough throws before, of course, the unfortunate injury. But I don't know. It feels like every year with the Bills, it's like they have no receivers, they have no defensive line, they can get pass rush. And Josh Allen tries to do too much. And I feel like I've been in media now for 5 years. And I just feel like every year kind of ends the same. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to have another offensive line coach is retiring. Aaron Cromer. I'm sorry. But before we get kind of the Knicks stuff, like, where are we at with the Bills? Like, Chuck, where are you at with the Bills overall? Just as an organization, can you even move on from McDermott? Like, what has to happen, do you think, in your eyes? Like, what needs to be done?
It's obviously frustrating for it to end like this, but man, like, you don't have some of those ridiculously stupid fumbles, we might not even be having this conversation. And ultimately, like, I don't think this is such a bad year for McDermott. Like, we've seen some guys on that defense start to develop. They had some nice moments down the stretch. In this game, like, they completely shut down Denver's run game. And I know that, you know, they don't have the full running back arsenal that they would love to, but that's been a huge problem for Buffalo's defense all year. And they stepped up and made that offense a little bit one-dimensional and had a lot of stretches in the second half where they didn't give up any points. So I think they're still undermanned. Like, we've seen Deion Walker develop. We've seen Christian Benford turn into a really nice starting cornerback for them. So just keep trying to find young guys in the draft, keep trying to find talented players, because he's going to figure out something. Because even when they were at their best, like you said, it wasn't like the most explosive defense. They played well and they were coached well and they played hard. So hopefully you can start to get some baseline talent level back, and hopefully those guys don't get, you know, banged up with so many injuries like what happened to Matt Milano, and he's not the same player anymore, because that's also been a huge loss for them over the years, like him not being able to stay at that peak level where he was one of the best linebackers in the league. So don't fire McDermott. You just got to keep running back. And I know it's frustrating, but I think we're going to see possibly with the Ravens and the Steelers potentially, depending on how those go, it's really hard to win and be in the playoffs every single year. Even when your quarterback's really good, it's really, really hard to do that. So I don't think you fire him. I think you just got to run it back, as lame as that sounds. Maybe you got a new GM.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Is there any frustrations with this roster construction for you, Matt? Maybe that may be a better line of questioning.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I'm with Charles. This is like the wrong year to fire McDermott. And I think there have been other years where maybe you could have justified like letting him go. This is the wrong year to do it. But if there was a scenario where they wanted to move on from Brandon Bean, I wonder if they would be one of those teams that thinks about like, hey, let's just get a full sweep in here. You know, I don't know if they will move on from Bean or not. I just think this roster, specifically the receiver position, I mean, it's hard to keep coming back to that. But they're another team that kind of died as they live. Like, whatever you thought about the Brandon Cooks, like, catch, not catch, we're throwing a Brandon Cooks in the freaking divisional round. And like, he's not. By the way, the person who thought that wasn't a catch the most was Brandon Cooks, because he came up acting like, ah, shoot, I didn't catch that pass. Like,
oh, yeah.
And that matters, man. No, he came up looking like, ah, shoot. Like, if he had come up doing, you know, one of these or any of that stuff, like, we might be having a different conversation, because clearly it's not that well thought out of a process here, obviously, with NFL officiating. So that might have even swung some decisions, or maybe had him take a harder look at the whole thing. I don't know. But again, the point of that is they're throwing to Brandon Cooks in the divisional round. And there's no question that Josh Allen dug them into a hole in this game. I mean, we can't just yada yada those moments. But that's the thing with the Bills. They're basically, if Josh Allen plays like Superman, they win the football game. If he doesn't, they lose the football game. And that's exactly what happened here. He did not play his best game, and that was just enough to get them to lose this game. Because how can you trust what has been put together on this offensive roster? And you know, the offensive line has been a huge success for this team. I think Cromer retiring cannot be overstated here, because now you're chipping away at that identity. And I just don't trust, like, It's crazy with Bean too, because, and this just happens, it happens in general with general managers and decision makers, whether it's in the draft or free agency or whatever, but he was running pretty good on receiver decisions for a moment there, right? Like, I loved not just the Stephon Diggs trade, but like Cole Beasley was a nice signing. John Brown was a really nice value signing. Khalil Shakir was a great get in the fifth round. And then it's just like everything since then, it's been terrible, and it's been like him trying to defend these really indefensible setups here. So I would get it if they moved on from Bean, especially because that ended up being the number one problem for them this season. Not the only problem, but the number one problem for them was their pass catchers. And his like hubris in handling it going into the season, I think, is a pretty, pretty troubling sign. So I'm not saying you have to do it, but I would get it if they did.
He kind of falls for the narrative scouting. Like, even like, okay, we need this type of player. Like, and then they just take the idea of a player as opposed to maybe what they actually need.
And it's like fixated on these weird things too. Remember the season when they tried to sign J.D. McKissick, and he was so pissed about it that then he turned around and he was like, well, now I have to draft James Cook because he's a great receiving back.
Yes.
And Cook has obviously been a great player for them, not for his receiving chops. It's been because he was just a damn good running back there. It's like, I've got to get a pass catcher, but we'll just get the tight end who's kind of like a receiver instead of just like, how about a receiver? I don't know. There's an idea.
They can run.
Yeah.
That doesn't need to be dialed up like specific plays in the red zone to be impactful. Yeah. I know. How many tackles has anyone on these guys broken? Does anyone remember, like, Khalil Shakir makes a lot of guys miss on the infinite amount of screens that he catches, but it's like, how many guys just make it a guy miss like in space or just create a big play after the catch? Like, it just feels like it's like catch and tackle. Like, that's what Kincaid feels like. That's what Keon Coleman definitely feels like. And of course, these old guys that they have out there, you know, relatively old. Brandon Cooks is younger than me. But these guys that they have out there at the end of the season, like, no one's making yak after. Everything's just very hard. The run game's great. Like, the run game's very good. Like, that's been one of the coolest things of this offense, how it's morphed from Brian Daboll going spread 10 personnel or zero personnel with no running backs, all receivers, and going RPO heavy, to what this offense run game has been under center, big bodies out there. But also, it just felt like the passing game kind of got neutered. There's a kind of a meme, I'm included with it, about how much mesh they run, which is two crossers. And on mesh, though, I have to be fair, is that a quarterback thing or is that a coordinator thing? If we're going to bring that up with guys like Jalen Hurts and other guys, and I know this happens, is quarterbacks have a lot of say on what they want to run. Dak Prescott's run variations of the same stuff his entire career in Dallas. Is that, like, is mesh because Josh Allen loves mesh? Like, is that what it is? Is that the reason? And you know, no one's going to say it from the inside there. Like, no one's going to go, oh, if we do that because of that, because that's not how this thing works. I don't know. I just think it's fair to ask. I think Josh Allen's still a dude, still incredible, but, like, it's just very hard. Like, there's a lot of frustrating decisions that happen. It feels like a lot of their signings don't work out. They got all these vet defensive linemen. They're all suspended. None of them are impactful. None of them were actually, like, a perfect fit. Cole Bishop had moments in the playoffs even, but he's not a perfect fit for this defense. That guy was running robber and stuff at Utah. And then now in this defense, they're trying to base out of quarters. They do some other stuff, don't get me wrong, but it's like, that's not what that guy was used as. I don't know. So there's some kind of square peg round hole guys. Like, even Maxwell Hairston, their first round pick, who's hurt, is that didn't feel like a match to what they did. Like, to me, I feel like they want big burly corners that are physical. And I don't know. Hairston's a speed guy. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like Bean quite gets, like, what he's drafting for. Like, he it's the idea, but it's ballpark of the idea. I don't know. That's just, again, as an outsider. And also, you talk about Brandon Cooks needing to sell it. I did think that after I've just defended Riley Moss for, it feels like, an entire year, saying, like, yeah, he gets penalized too much and everything, they finally don't call one on him in the end zone on Brandon Cooks.
I was thinking, like, the same exact thing.
Yeah.
They don't call it in the biggest moment. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this whole year, that guy gets the worst penalties, some brutal ones he shouldn't be called on. And then they finally swallow the whistle. And I swear it's because Brandon Cooks didn't sell it at all. Yeah. I'd much rather not get called in the playoffs than get called for all the ones in the regular season. That's a good one not to get called on. But all right. But the Bills, yeah, very frustrating. As frustrating as Gene. Oh, God, Mean Gene. Steratore. Just, God, his analysis, just nothing, man. That Josh Allen slide play against the Jags still ticks me off. Then he goes on Twitter and he words, talking about all the replay and why it needs to be this and that. And it's like, no, you're paid to do it in the moment. I know it's college basketball season, but I need you to focus on this right now. Like, I need you to know what the freaking slide rules are that I've known since I was a kid. And you're paid to do this and be an analyst about it. And then coming on this and provide no analysis. Yeah, yeah, I think they got it right here. You see what they did tonight? Like, Terry did a great job on NBC. He was probably crapping his pants about it, going like, you gotta be kidding me, there's a bang bang one of these again. But at least Terry was, like, prepared and actually was ready to talk. But anyways, last thing, Jarrett Stidham, do you guys have any thoughts? Broncos, Jarrett Stidham hosting against the Patriots, any thoughts on what could happen as we go in? I know we will preview it later this week, Chuck.
This is his first action in 2 years. I don't know. I mean, he's not the worst backup out there, but again, he hasn't had a throw that's counted since 2023, and now he's walking to the AFC title game. So, good luck, pal. I don't know.
Matt, any Stidham thoughts?
I mean, yeah, it is a little bit of good luck. I'm rooting for him, though. I think I'm rooting for the post quarterback Super Bowl. That's what I'm rooting for, I think, at this point, because the quarterback stuff has gotten so nauseating. Like, especially on the Patriots side of it, it's like everybody wants to talk about the Patriots schedule, this, that, and the other. And even as it was cropping up tonight, it's like, oh man, if the Patriots end up going to the Super Bowl, that just means they beat choking, you know, Justin Herbert, they beat CJ Stroud, and then they beat Jarrett Stidham. Like, so folks, there's a lot of other football players out there on the field. And by the way, you just mentioned, like, three of the best defenses in the NFL this season: the Los Angeles Chargers, the damn Texans, and the damn Broncos. So yeah, if the Patriots get to the Super Bowl, it is deserved. But in a way, yeah, I think I'm kind of rooting for the post quarterback Super Bowl. And I think that would obviously include Jarrett Stidham's great. I mean, why not? Like he could be the Nick Foles of this year. Sure, let's make it happen. Who cares? It just these are all a lot of really well built teams. So, you know, let's see what happens.
This is kind of related. I was thinking about this earlier today, just in regards to like where the coverage is now. Would there be room for a player like Brian Dawkins to be as popular as he was back then today? Like, we don't even really talk about defensive players like that in the same way. It's all quarterbacks. It's all crazy. Quarterbacks. Yeah. It's like you would think that like 11 Jalen Hurts went out there and kicked Mahomes' ass in the Super Bowl last year, the way that game has been discussed. Like, I really don't understand.
Both Super Bowls.
Like, there's no fascination with the other parts in the field, and they're all on the field. You can watch all of them. You don't have to just default to the quarterback. But I have a change. Zoom out the camera. Zoom out the camera when you record these games on the broadcast. So maybe we can get more people seeing what's going on back there, and they'll care a little bit more. Because Matt's right. Like, the all quarterback stuff is insane, and it's all people care about now. It's the only thing.
How many times I got tagged this weekend? Like, people are like, not even trying to be like mean. They're like genuinely saying this to me on social media. I'm like, so make sure to criticize Josh Allen today, like you criticize the other quarterbacks. I was like, that's your first thought?
I'm talking to my family, bro. What are you talking about?
That's your first thought from these games? Like that? I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't like him just like every week just have a hierarchy breaking down, like just going, yep, now knock him down. Oh, I didn't criticize him enough. Now we've got to prop him back up. Like, it's just like so much. Like a guy could throw for 380 and three touchdowns and play like. And a guy could throw for 210 and one touchdown and play like a god. And that's why you got to like watch these games and actually see what kind of what comes from it. And also just take one game and not extrapolate gigantic takeaways about other quarterbacks in every situation being the exact same. It's not like even baseball has differences with pitchers and hitters and catchers and fielders and everything, but that's the most individual team sport. Football is the most team sport, like the most team that team sports can be. It's the most Rick. Like that's what football's all about. There's 22 dudes out there, plus refs, plus coaches with headsets. Like there's a lot of variables. Like there's a lot of impact on that. Like quarterbacks are important, the most important position, but not the only position. And the all stuff has just been infuriating to me.
not to mention too, like the whole idea of I don't see anybody because. If you've got issues with like, nobody's criticizing this player, you've got a media consumption. You've got a consumption problem. That's on you. Like there's 500 freaking podcasts out there. There's a bajillion TV shows. There's thousands of articles. I guarantee you someone out there has dunked on Josh Allen plenty after that game. And I mean, we said it on this show. It's like, hey, he did not play well enough for them to win that game. Obviously, he dug them into a hole. Like we said that on this show. We've done our job. And it's like, well, imagine if that was Lamar Jackson. There's a section of the internet that babies Lamar Jackson. There's a section of the internet that dunks on Lamar Jackson. Like the internet's a big place. If you're really that concerned about it, consume more content. Mostly our content, but consume some other content
too. Yeah, yes. Mostly ours. Yes. We're fair enough. Yes,
mostly ours.
Most definitely. Yeah, Football 3-1, everything at Yahoo.
The last thing I have on is it's so funny when people are like, hey, remember when you said no, not really, I actually don't really do that.
I say a lot of words for a living.
I believe you when you said that I said it, but like, no, I'm not really concerned about why aren't you calling out so-and-so. I'm playing video games right now. I'm on the phone with my mom. I don't know why aren't you calling someone out. If you want it to happen so bad, you do it. If it matters so much to you. So strange. Like enjoy the game. It's the highest level of the sport. Just watch the game and enjoy it. You know, you don't have to be so damn mad after all these
so much
incredible
cool
games with incredible athletes, man.
Yeah, Byron Murphy. Great shout out, Byron Murphy. Let's talk about that and less about quarterback reality shows, please.
Witherspoon. I know, we should just name a player from each unit that's not a quarterback.
We didn't even mention the Seahawks quarterback in our breakdown of that game. Look at that.
I know.
No, we didn't.
There's nothing to say.
Post quarterback Super Bowl. There we
Sometimes quarterback. Yeah, post quarterback. Sometimes quarterbacks can be passengers. It's okay. It happens. It's how actually football was for a long time. For a long time until we glorified all of this and everything turned into NBAification, where it's just all about the drama of the one-on-one. It was the Taylor Swift quote about this. She goes, "I legit thought it was just a quarterback versus a quarterback," and I was like, "I know." And that's a problem, Taylor.
There's something to say.
That's an issue with how this game is getting presented. yeah, I know. So after we just said if we're post quarterback, my Jarrett Stidham thoughts, you might surprise some people. With the preseason, he actually had some moments. I will say that. He had some moments. I'm not saying crazy, oh my God, Kurt Warner, all this, but like he had some moments. And there's a line in horse racing. A good jockey can't win you a race, but a bad jockey can lose you one. And I don't think he's a bad jockey. I think he's just a fine jockey. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, I don't think he's going to lose it for the Broncos, but I think he can kind of like
hold it. He could be a very scared jockey, though. He could be a very scared
jockey. He could be a very scared jockey. That's true.
Hasn't played in 2 years. That's true.
I honestly thought he was much older than he is because he feels like he's been around for he's been in my brain for a long time because as like a prop because he was like a touted guy for a minute
super prospect from high school
and then did he transfer
transfer
from somewhere to Auburn
Baylor to Auburn something like that
that's what I thought. Okay, yeah. And that's how I remember. And then he was with the Patriots and everything. He battled with Cam Newton and all that. And like Sean Payton signed him right away once he got to Denver, which isn't nothing. I don't know. I think he can keep at least the train on the tracks a little bit. It's not like a total. I mean, Riley Leonard had a nice half. He had a rough weekend. But Riley Leonard had a nice half against that Texans defense in week 18. But yeah, let's talk about that. But I know they're playing the Patriots, all that. But actually, let's close this out. This is kind of like a by the way, extra credit, whatever you want to talk about. The Falcons hire Kevin Stefanski. Chuck, you're here. Any quick reactions? Stefanski looks like also keeping Jeff Ulbrich at defense coordinator like that. Also looks like they're bringing in Bill Callahan, an offensive line coach, which is interesting because they're moving on from a good old line coach. And it's like, well, it's Bill Callahan. Okay, I get it. I totally get that. But Chuck, what were your thoughts on the Stefanski hire to Atlanta?
Yeah, it's looks like Tommy Reese is going to be joining Stefanski again as the OC. Which, hey, dude, I think Tommy Reese has kind of earned some chops this year. Because he took over play calling because, you know, Kevin did the thing in the 2 years in a row. You know, season's done. Tommy, take us home. And he did a pretty good job. Like, when Shedeur Sanders was starting, for the first, 6 weeks he was starting, they were averaging over one EPA per screen pass. Like, that's insane. Just absurd. And they had moments where they were, you know, able to call an offense and then, he has the point in the game where you have to big boy drop back and you can't quite do it because your quarterback's not good enough. So, this is a two-time coach of the year. And I think, when you look at Jacoby Brissett starting in Arizona, Joe Flacco still beating the NFL, that doesn't happen without the runs that they had with Stefanski. So I'm excited, really excited. If you follow me on Blue Sky, I had some concerns about Matt Ryan just getting this job, considering his complete lack of experience. But it seems like he was the driver behind getting this. So, go president of football in Falcons history. Call it right now, Matt Ryan. Good first hire, and we'll see, you know, what the rest of this looks like because it seems like he's got a lot of control over what's going on there in Atlanta right now. But I'm happy. That was my number one choice. I thought he was the best candidate on the market, flat out. So, got a guy now. Pay Kyle Pitts. Pay him now.
I get some of those Harold Fannin touches. I straddle the line between the QB club, which is a thing, and then like the O line club, which is a thing. And it's like, but it's nice sometimes we have a guy that's so well liked, like Matt Ryan. So like all these coaches and stuff, probably it's like, oh yeah, let's go, Matt. And like, I don't know, puts him at ease. It is an advantage. It really is. And Matt's very well liked. There's some quarterbacks that aren't, but because they're such psychotic competitors. But Matt is definitely well liked. So that definitely did help with this. Matt, Bijan Robinson with a guy that loves to pound the rock. That's pretty exciting. Drake London, thoughts, but anything with the Stefanski hire that you like? Ulbrich coming on, Callahan, any thoughts with this hire?
Yeah, I'm with Charles. Like, let's keep Kyle Pitts around and get him some of those Harold Fannin looks here. Get like a true inline tight end. I mean, David Njoku, is he a free agent this year? Maybe he could come to Atlanta and kind of just hang out as that inline tight end guy while Pitts does the move around stuff. But I am at least interested to see how Drake London gets deployed in this offense because it is more traditionally just a 12 personnel unit. And I really like a lot of what they've done with London from the slot. But yeah, I mean, Bijan Robinson, 2K season loading under Kevin Stefanski. I'm into it.
Yeah, Tyler Algier, free agent as well. So we'll see what goes with that. I'm sorry, Chuck. I'm going to be touting him signed as underage free agent. Yeah, I know. I know you want to bring him back. I know.
We're going to bring Kyle Pitts back. We're going to bring Algier back. We're going to cut Kirk and then bring him back too. And we're going to run it back. We're going to lose 14 games to get Arch in 2027 and have like the biggest blue balls run you've ever seen in Falcons history.
Has someone come up with like a little rhyme for Arch yet? There's got to be. It's so easy. It's such a name to rhyme with. Put one in the comments. I don't know. Reaction. I don't know. Is there like a
Fart March for Arch?
Yeah,
March for Arch. Seems
Some of that's Yeah, but that's kind of like a good way of marching. There's got to be like a fall of some sort. I don't know. But yeah, I like this hire. We'll figure it out. Stefanski has made a lot of different types of quarterbacks work. So whether it's Cousins coming back for this or Penix, whenever he comes back with after his next knee surgery, whatever it is, Stefanski at least shows that he's a floor lifter. I know the Browns offense and their stats were just atrocious this year. They're starting a third round quarterback and a fifth round quarterback with a bunch of backup offensive linemen to throwing to a receiver that doesn't run correct routes. The second receiver was on IR with concussions and other things. A rookie tight end that was drafted in the third round, a rookie running back drafted in the second round. So things were going to look a little
rough. A rookie receiver who you signed like in mid August in Isaiah Bond because correct. He was, you know, gotten in trouble with the law.
Stuff.
So also,
because of stuff.
The backup running back, also a rookie, Dylan Sampson. Like, that was correct. A very young team. Yeah.
And they made some things. There was moments where that run game was popping off. Like, you mentioned the screens. I have a lot of respect for Stefanski, always trying to hybrid stuff. Like, even when Deshaun Watson got there, it was like, okay, how do we do the under center stuff with Watson being in the gun? They tried, and they just scamming for Manning. There it is. But no, they tried. But the thing was, it turned out just Deshaun Watson was a lemon. It wasn't anything with the offensive structure. It was just that he was bad now. That's really all it was. that it turned out. But this guy is, I mean, the offense when they had Jacoby Brissett was like a real offense and one of the more surprisingly fun ones. You mentioned the Flacco stuff. Baker, when he was there, even if that wasn't a perfect match, they had some runs. I don't know. I really liked Stefanski. I thought he was a nice second prize of this pool.
Yeah, the last thing I have on this was I was kind of optimistic about this happening from the jump because, you know, if you're Kevin Stefanski, you got to answer about some of the Deshaun Watson stuff. Like, what happened there? Except for one team who you don't have to answer any questions from because they had the initial Deshaun Watson trade. You can't ask Kevin about Deshaun because Kevin's going to ask you, what are you doing about Deshaun?
Yeah, we don't ask, don't tell.
Right. Like, if you go back and look at the picture where Deshaun Watson finds out he's a Brown, there's a Falcons jersey in the background that's like in a hamper somewhere. So, hey, they all got to like, let's not talk about that one and come on down, Kevin. So I'm ironically,
excited. Matt Ryan was on the team at the time, too.
So right.
Yes.
Right.
Before they got him. Yes. Before traded him.
Yes. Yes. So
unbelievable.
Good stuff from Atlanta. Oh, I hope it works out because we are staring down the barrel of something grim if they don't show something this year.
Yeah. Stefanski is just doomed to not have a quarterback plan. Like that's just that his he hey, what if I told you're gonna be a head coach of two teams? You're gonna win two Coach of the Year awards, you're gonna make millions of dollars, everyone's gonna know your name, and you're never gonna have a franchise quarterback. that's the monkey's paw of what he's taking. But we'll see. Maybe there's the scamming for Manning. I think that's what I'm going with. I love that. He is QB1, by the way, for next year's class. The North Sellers QB2. Yeah, but we'll go on from there. It'll be a fun talk about all that. We're in Mendoza season right now. Tom Brady's in Miami having everybody come out there going like, hey, like this quarterback I'm about to draft? Yeah, check him out. That's what he's doing when he's interviewing all these guys. But plenty of coaching talk because we have plenty of spots to fill. And we also have moving on to the conference championship weekend, which we'll preview later this week, but we're closing it out tonight. I'll be back on Tuesday with Matt. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. That's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB. That's Charles McDonald. You can find him at 4verts. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast. Watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel, like a lot of you are right now. Appreciate you guys joining us here on Sunday night. Make sure to join us next week as we recap these games, or the conference championships games, the final two, final four. Yeah, be fun. No QBs. That's what Football 301 is saying. No QBs. The end is nigh. Thanks to Stone, Austin, and Madison behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Please subscribe here at YouTube as well. Like us here on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.